Hey there. We at Blue Wire just wanted to take a second to thank you for listening to this podcast. We know everything outside is pretty scary and uncertain, but we're committed to helping you get through your day by talking about the sports and teams that you love most. If you're looking for more great podcasts to distract you, check out BlueWirePods.com. Thanks for listening. Enjoy the podcast and stay safe.
We are excited to know where we're going to be playing and excited to have a city that is excited about having us.
Once you're a Raider, you're always a Raider, no matter what city.
We are now the Las Vegas Raiders.
What's up, everybody? It's time for another episode of the Vegas Nation podcast brought to you by STN Sports Mobile by Station Casinos. I'm your host, Heidi Fang, also joined along with our writers here today, Vinny Bonsignor, Miles Simmons, and our sports columnist, Ed Graney. We're going to break down all the new news happening here around the NFL world, as well as get into some linebacker depth with the Raiders. Don't forget to keep up with every article and all the updated news on VegasNation.com. Download the Vegas Nation app. Check out everything that we do also on social media at Vegas Nation. And if you're ever checking out reviewjournal.com, go to the podcast tab, check out some of our other shows while you're there. If Golden Edge has you covered on hockey, RJ Ringside has you covered on combat sports, podcasts has you covered on everything happening around town. So make sure to hit subscribe while you're listening to any of the shows that you enjoy. We're here with you all through everything happening right now at the NFL world. And big news just broke. Vinny, you wrote this one up. The NFL has approved a 14 teams making it to the playoffs now. That means six wildcard teams will get a crack here in the playoffs. This is going to be interesting as far as what it means to people coming in to the playoff realm. It kind of levels out a little bit more with the other sports like NHL and NBA, where more than 50% of the teams make the playoffs. It's not quite 50% here in the NFL right now. It makes it about in the 40s, but it means that we'll see, a little bit more excitement on wild card weekend. Vinny, what did you gather from what you reported here about the 14 team playoff now?
Yeah, and you know, this was expected. They had already kind of approved the moving forward with it, at least as a vote, about a month and a half ago or so. And it was a reminder today when all this broke that I was supposed to be in Florida this week at the NFL owners meetings, but obviously for good reason that got canceled. And so typically they do these votes at the league meeting, wherever it might be. This year it was going to be in Florida, but in lieu of that, they did the vote via conference call. And from what I understand, it was, unanimous. Obviously it was just kind of a, just to make it official today type of a vote. But one of the things that's always interested me about this is that now, rather than four teams getting bye weeks through the first round, your top two seeds in each conference, that's been condensed to just two teams now. So only the top seed, the teams with the best record in each conference, get a bye week. So that's important. The Kansas City Chiefs would not have had a bye week last year in the playoffs. Only the Baltimore Ravens, who had the best record in the NFL or in the AFC, would have gotten the bye week. So that changes things, considerably. I go two ways on this one. I think if you're one of the top two seeds in the NFL in your conference, you deserve a bye week through the first week. But on the other hand, this means that when you get to the end of the season, I think more teams are going to be playing their starters that last week of the season. So, you're not going to show up at the Coliseum like Miles and I did, the LA Coliseum a few years ago, and there were a bunch of nobodies playing, right? Miles, remember those games? When everything was pretty much said and done, teams, would rest their starters. You're probably not going to see that as much moving forward. So that's a good thing. But overall, I think I would have kept it at four bye week teams. But obviously, the NFL wants more games on that opening weekend, that wild card weekend, and we're certainly going to get it now.
Definitely more games means more ads, more money coming in for the organization. But Ed, when you think about more teams getting in, we were kind of talking about this just before we started recording. Do you think it promotes a sense of mediocrity?
Oh, of course it does. I mean, this is them. This is the NFL. Like it or not, they want more TV money. They want more TV. It's the epitome of their greed. I mean, they're pretty much greedy in everything. They don't apologize for it. That's what they want. They want more ads and more money. So you're going to see 8-8, more 8-8 teams, maybe 7-9. And I just think this is stupid. Miles said it best before he came on. You don't change for the sake of change. This isn't making anything better. This is just adding more to get them more money, and you're mediocrity. You're promoting mediocrity now. So, you know, we know why they do these things. I don't think it's in a secret, but at the end of the day, we'll all watch it if we're not covering it, and the TV ratings will be huge and they'll get their money, and we'll just keep going on with how this league is.
Miles, like Ed was saying, we did talk about this beforehand and you had some thoughts as well, like with in terms of kind of teams getting the chance to rest their starters. I've never been a big, huge fan of the buys on the first on those teams that have the number one seed, just because of the sense of that. Like the starters don't go, then you have to kind of question if they're rusty when it gets time for them to go, or if the rest has been too much for them, they lose a sense of momentum. What thoughts do you have on that, and just generally about what's happening now with the 14-team playoffs?
Sure. Well, I mean, I don't love the new playoff format. I always thought that, you know, and I guess this is just from the way I've grown up watching football, and it's been this way basically for my entire football consciousness. So I don't necessarily think that it needs to change. I understand why it is, but I like that the top two seeds in each conference get a reward for being the top two seeds in each conference. I think it is very hard to go through a 16-game season and be one of the top two seeds in your conference. It's hard to do that from a lot of different standpoints. You have to, you know, be able to weather the storm of injuries a lot of the time. And I think if you earn one of those top two spots, you have earned the right to be in the second week of the postseason. Now, I think the one thing that I would say, and Vinny, you may mention before of how, you know, teams, how we saw, you know, especially in 2017, the Rams were resting their starters there at the LA Coliseum against the 49ers there in week 17. I actually think that in some ways this might increase that from a couple of different standpoints. If you are a division winner and you know you're not going to have a shot at being the number one seed, you really don't have very much to gain in terms of knowing that you're going to have a home playoff game, whether or not you're the two seed or the four seed. Now, you can say, okay, well, if we're the two seed, it's going to make a bit of a difference because then we have a better shot at hosting the AFC championship game or the NFC championship game or whatnot. But I think a lot of times coaches feel, all right, we know we have one playoff game guaranteed, and we know that that is going to be at our place. And so I don't know how much it's going to change, you know, the mindset of guys. Obviously, getting that number one seed is going to become a huge priority because you're going to have a significant advantage over the rest of the playoff field if you are that number one overall seed. But, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what opponent you then get, because, of course, if you're the two seed, you're going to probably be facing somebody that's 9-7, if not 8-8, right? Maybe you get a 10-win teams throughout the course of an entire season in a certain conference. But I don't know. I think Ed is kind of right too when he's saying that, you know, it's a bit of a promoting mediocrity, because you would have had the Rams at 9-7. I don't think anybody really thought that the Rams were Super Bowl contenders last year. They would have come out of the NFC, and then the Steelers would have come out of the AFC at 8-8. So what would we really have gained by seeing Rams, Packers, and then Chiefs, Steelers? Do we really need to see that last year? I don't know. But, you know, other years it might make a better, might be a bigger difference.
Well, yeah, and we don't know what we would have seen. Maybe we would have seen tremendous upsets. We see that in the NCAA tournament all the time, and we revel in it. We love it. So
Loved it. I want to see Aaron Rodgers play in the NFC Championship game. I want to see Patrick Mahomes play in the AFC Championship game. I wouldn't have loved it. I wouldn't have.
Well, okay, so down the line, if a let's say a 7-9 team sneaks in, which will probably happen, or an 8-8 team, and they just get on, you know, the run of runs, and they get to the Super Bowl, that's not going to be a good story to you. I mean, I think we're in the story writing business and the story making business. To me, that may not happen a lot, but it's going to happen every once in a while, and I think that would be pretty cool. And I love it. I loved seeing the one seed, you know, get taken down by, you know, a lower seed in the NCAA tournament. To me, that adds to the drama. It adds to what we do. It adds to the fans' delight. And let's face it, yes, they're greedy. They're making money off of this. But, you know, let's go back to the college, all the bowl games in college. We're all watching that, right? If you're home on a Wednesday night, you know, and you're changing the channels, and on ESPN they've got a game, you might not even know who the two schools are, but chances are, if you're a sports fan, you're going to watch it, and you might get into it, and you might see somebody in those games that, oh, lo and behold, that becomes an NFL. I remember that dude from you know, whatever stupid bowl that I was watching him playing. So the more the better for me. I don't want to get ridiculous on it, but yeah, you might have a losing team or a 500 team, but if one of those teams ends up making a run into the Super Bowl, me personally, I think it'll be pretty cool.
But I would have rather seen Patrick Mahomes than Duck Hodges. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah. Well, speaking of 7-9 teams that could make it, I mean, what does this do to increase the Raiders' chances when you look at the Chiefs having dominated this division for so long? I mean, as the Raiders continue to develop their roster and try to make themselves a playoff contender, especially as they head into their first year here in Las Vegas, how much do you think this would improve their chances, especially in such a tough division that they have?
Well, since they've gone 1 in like 100 years, it might improve them, or 1 in 17 or whatever it is at this point. I mean, I don't think anyone considers them a playoff team at this point. We'll see what happens next year. But, you know, 7-9 wouldn't have got them in. Like Miles said, 8-8 would have with the Steelers. So, you know, it's year to year. It depends on how, you know, we've seen it with the Niners, you know, a couple of years ago. And Miles can tell me, I think they had the second pick and then they went to the Super Bowl. So it can be done, but they have a lot to prove. I mean, they have a lot to prove they can even compete in that division. I think the Chargers got better. The Broncos got better. I think the Raiders have gotten, you know, somewhat better in spots. I don't know if the Chiefs needed to get better. So they have a long way just to compete in their division, never mind talk about the playoffs.
If you go back to last year, now think of it this way, and I think that this is an important way to look at it. There's times where the NFC East, you know, Ed's conference division with his hapless Cowboys, you know, it's sometimes it's a crappy division, and sometimes you win by default because it's a crappy division, and some third place team, which is probably a better team than you are, is out on the, you know, in the cold because they're playing in a really good division. And I think that happened this year with the, let me look at it real quick. I think the Rams were a better team maybe than the Cowboys or whoever won that terrible division. What was it? It was the Eagles. They were 9-7. You can make a case that the Rams at 9-7 were better than the Eagles last year, but because of the division that the Rams were in, you know, a better division. The NFC West was better than the AFC, than the NFC East. So you're going to have some times where actually it works out. Like, you know, there are times where teams miss the playoffs, even though they're better than a division winning team from a other division. So, I'm going to guess right now that it's going to balance out as the years play out. You'll see just as many teams deservedly make the playoffs as teams that undeservedly make the playoffs.
I don't know. The hapless Cowboys beat the Rams.
They did.
Both hapless. hapless Cowboys beat the Rams. So I don't know.
A lot of good it did them.
Theory of transitivity.
They still finished 8-8.
Yeah, they both stopped. Like, I mean, like,
okay, stink is a little.
I wouldn't say stunk. Yeah, that's not the word we're looking for.
I mean, but look, the Raiders are not going to be in a bad division as long as Mahomes is alive. So, you know, they got to figure out how to deal with that guy.
And that's why this might help them, because, you know, they might be they might be better than, you know, the let's go to the AFC East this year. The AFC East might be horrible this year. Let's just say that. And maybe the second place team in the AFC West is better than the division winning team in the AFC East. So maybe some justification will happen. Maybe the Raiders as the third place team are better than the AFC Central team. So I guess what I'm saying is, yeah, they're going to have to deal with the Kansas City Chiefs. And that's not going to be pretty for any of the teams in the AFC West. But that doesn't mean that they aren't, or some other AFC West team isn't a playoff contending team. It's just that they happen to be playing behind a juggernaut right now.
I would say that also, this comes from Josh Dubo of the Associated Press, our friend from the Bay Area. And he pointed this out when this the playoff format things just first started coming up in mid-February. So he retweeted Adam Schefter, who had tweeted about it, and he said, under this format, the Raiders would still only have one playoff berth in the past 17 seasons. So, you know, right. Like, I think, and obviously the Raiders are on an upward trajectory. Right. They're on an upward trajectory, and I think that that is something worth noting. But, you know, they you still have to go out and win games, right? So that I think is the biggest point.
And, you know, every year, even in college football, we're always arguing on who got screwed out of a playoff, the top one of the top four playoff teams or beyond, you know, prior to that. You know, it was, you know, the BCS and how that format was. So you're always going to have a team any given year that was on the outside looking in, and you're like, wow, that was a pretty good team. They just maybe they had an injury, maybe their quarterback was hurt the first three games of the season, and you know they lost three games because of that. But then ended up, you know, once the quarterback got back on track, and were maybe the one of the best teams in the NFL, but because of what happened earlier in the season, you know, that they were shut out. Teams like that now might have a better opportunity. But more than anything, it creates what we're doing right now, argument and talking about it. And that's always, to me anyway, that's always a good thing.
Thank you, NFL, for giving us more for the content machine in the middle of a pandemic.
Well, just to wrap up this conversation, historically, since the wild card system started out in 1970, 10 wild card teams went all the way to the Super Bowl. So Raiders fell in there at 1980, the Raiders, but it was before there was the game, the format the way it is now. So, yeah, this is going to be interesting to see how it develops with the different teams added in now. And again, find all this content on VegasNation.com. But guys, another thing that happened here with the CBA that I wanted to address, it gets into, you know, Eric Reed wanting the CBA invalidated because he's arguing some of the language that changed after they voted. He says that before they voted, there were different items on the league disability plan, meaning that players who had applied before January 1st, 2015, were able to get some extended benefits. But then after this was approved, it changed to after January 1st, 2015. How much of a case does Eric Reed have here? And who is this affecting, Vinny?
Well, I mean, if it turns out that that was the case, that the NFL or somebody, whether it was arbitrarily or mistakenly, we don't, you know, necessarily know, rewrote that, then yeah, he definitely has a case. I wouldn't say that it needs to be completely nullified. They just changed the, you know, if there was an error or if somebody overstepped their bounds, you know, change it back to what the agreement was. But I don't think this is cause to you know, nullify the whole document and go back through another vote. You know, as much as Eric Reed would probably like that, and he's kind of that guy, and I respect him. You know, he's a stickler, and he's, you know, pro union, and you know, and all of those type of things. We're not begrudging him anything, but disband it or nullify it, I'm not so sure that it rises to that level. Just get that part of it fixed.
Does he have a case here, Ed? Eric Reed to fix the CBA or to have it invalidated by any means?
Well, he definitely have a case to change it back if his attorneys and agents are holding one copy of it and the other one says something different. Of course, they should change it back. And the NFL, I think, will do that because you definitely don't want to. If this is the change they need to make, it would be stupid not to. You know, look, I don't know what happened here, but if Eric Reed's attorneys didn't find this out, obviously the players before January 1, 2015 ultimately would. It's funny. I was talking to a former NFL player this morning. He threw this out. I don't know if this is true, but at this point, you can throw anything out on this. Would anyone think this is the owners doing this on purpose to put this in there and to change because they eventually didn't like a lot that was in the CBA? I wouldn't. If they change it back, I wouldn't revote. I still have a much bigger issue with the 500 players that didn't even vote. I think there's an issue there why they wouldn't vote on this. But the other thing is if this happened, if I'm Eric Reed's attorneys or if I'm any player in this league that voted on it, I'd have my attorneys go through it fine tooth and comb and see if they did anything else in this thing. I'm sure this isn't a 2-page document. These are big documents that are handed over. I'd go through every line now because obviously you don't know what they might have changed or what might have been changed mistakenly or not. We don't know if it was a mistake or not, but if this was the only thing, I wouldn't revote, but you better change that because obviously this is not what the players agreed to.
To go back to what Ed was saying about the 500 players, I agree with you. I think you should vote. I mean, if you have the right to vote, you vote. But there was a player that I spoke to, and this was, you know, and a smart guy too. And he was like, look, I voted no, but if it passes, I'll be cool with that too. So I think there were a lot of players that were like, whatever happens, I'll be okay with. If it doesn't pass, it doesn't pass. We'll get it fixed. So maybe there were 500 other guys who were like, why do I even vote? Whatever happens, happens. I'll be okay. So I don't like that line of thinking, but I think there were a lot of guys that obviously did.
And Miles, how often have you ever seen this, that the NFL owners do go back to change the actual verbiage in a document like this once it's been voted upon? I mean, how much authority do they have to do that with this CBA after it's already been approved by the players?
Yeah, you know, I wouldn't expect that they would go back and do very much to revise it. I don't necessarily know why exactly that got changed. I think that there probably should be a little bit more coming out about that. But I don't think that Eric Reed really has very strong case, especially based on exactly what it was. Looking at it, you know, after that letter he put out there and social media and all those different things, and I'm not a lawyer, so I don't necessarily know all that much about these things, and I should be clear about that, I suppose. But it didn't seem like too much was changed in that. Now I know by the letter of the law, if you agree to something, you know, it should be exactly what you agreed to. But I would not anticipate there being another vote on this. And I would agree with both of the guys with saying, you know, I don't think that – I think that there's an issue when you have 500 players not voting, right? And I think that this is a larger societal issue that, you know, obviously comes into play with regular elections and why don't people vote in elections and different things like that. And, you know, but I think that people need to understand more. And in this case in particular, players really, I feel like, should have understood a little bit better. Your vote really does have consequences here, because if you have a margin of the votes that was, it was less than 100, wasn't it? It was something around 60.
It was in the 60s.
Yeah.
Right. So, there are 500 people that don't vote. And that is a huge swing that could have happened. So your opinion matters. You know, if you're in this league, this matters. And it doesn't just matter for you. It matters for people beyond you, beyond the time that you are going to be in this league. And so I wish that more players had really embraced that, because especially when you see the higher profile players, guys like even Josh Jacobs saying, you know, I'm very disappointed that this thing passed. And then you see the consequences of what's happening now. You know, you're going to have a 17th game, and who knows what the consequences would have been had they not done that. And obviously the owners eventually probably won 18 games, and that's maybe another conversation. But again, I just feel like if you have something that is this consequential, you need to be voting for it.
Well, let's go ahead and get into some of this linebacker depth that we were going to discuss today as well here on the show with the Raiders and how the team has evolved post Khalil Mack trade. I mean, at this point, it's something you mentioned the name Josh Jacobs there, Miles, where, you know, basically the Raiders were able to get Josh Jacobs because of the Khalil Mack trade. He was the Mack pick of last year. This year, they get the 19th pick, 2 third-rounders and a 6th-rounder. Will the Raider fans ever really kind of move on from John Gruden having traded Khalil Mack? Do you think they already are past it and they're looking now to the future? What are your thoughts on this, Vinny?
Just win, baby. I think when you win, people move on from things rather quickly. I haven't heard. I mean, I got on board in November. At least the Raider fans that are following me, and I haven't heard Khalil Mack's name mentioned, I don't even think once, to be honest with you, in terms of, like, you know, wow, we really still need Khalil Mack. I think the fans that I interact with are really excited about the first round picks and the additions that were made during free agency and what they're going to do moving forward. I think, you know, obviously you trade away a player like Khalil Mack, it's going to be a sting, and fans are going to wonder why, and there's going to be some anger about that and frustration. But I think as time moves on and new players come aboard, and as long as Mike Mayock is hitting on these first round picks and these additional picks that they have, I think the fans move on pretty quickly.
And Miles, somebody that we have already spoke about a little bit here in the past weeks was Corey Littleton. That's somebody that I know that you've had experience in watching and covering as part of the Rams. And I think we were alluding to the fact that the Raiders now have a kind of a true play caller in that defensive linebacker role in the Mike sense. You know, you have your Sam, you have your Will, you have your Mike. And you have a guy in Corey Littleton that can lead a defense. So what do you make about him now stepping into that position and kind of taking over a leadership role, as well as the addition of like Nick Kukowski?
Yeah, you know, I think that the Raiders have set themselves up to be in pretty good position when it comes to the linebacker spot. I think that that was someplace where they certainly struggled last year for, a few different reasons. And I'm sure we'll talk about one of those in a little bit as well. But I think, look, when you have somebody like Corey Littleton, he is a good sideline to sideline linebacker. And that's exactly what you need in today's NFL. You cannot have guys who aren't athletic anymore. I mean, you can't just have your prototypical Ray Lewis, big guy, you know, Brian Urlacher, big guy. And at their peak, those guys were also decent sideline to sideline linebackers. But those guys were more thumpers. They were run stuffers. They were guys that were just going to come up and hit you. You need somebody in today's NFL that can cover a tight end, that can cover a running back as well. And you can't, because the way that offenses are so explosive, especially when you're going up against somebody like Andy Reid and his play designs twice a year, your linebackers have to be athletic and they have to be able to run and cover and tackle as well. So I think that's something that Corey Littleton can definitely bring. And he has that speed element too, so he can keep up with those athletic players.
And how would you grade what the Raiders were able to do with the linebacker position in free agency? And we'll look ahead to the draft. But I mean, as of last year, when you look at the linebacker position, it was kind of just a quandary the entire year, like who was going to be the big leader. Obviously, they let go of Tahir Whitehead, and you know they've retained Kyle Wilbur and Markel Lee. And Moreau is another one that has a second round tender on him. But I wonder, when you look at the landscape right now of that position, how much do you feel like they've improved?
Oh, they've improved a ton. I think just because of the two Miles talked about, they get an A. I mean, you know, you mentioned Whitehead. I mean, Heidi, I haven't seen you run a route lately, but he couldn't cover you. Think about these numbers last year with Tahir Whitehead. He had 65 targets and they connected on 51 of them, which is 78.5% quarterback rating when they targeted Whitehead's receiver, 141.5. So, and Gruden continued throughout the year praising him. I know on the dead cap, he's $1 million. If he was as good as John Gruden said, you would take the 6-2 on the cap. He's not. So, you know, he played the most. He was very good against the run. He only missed like 5 or 6 tackles. But Miles is right. You know, you're trying to cover Travis Kelce. He can't do that. And he proved it time and time again. He could not cover anyone. When you talk about Markel Lee, I mean, I thought he had a nice sophomore campaign, but he couldn't stay healthy last year. So they needed linebackers, and I think Kukowski and Littleton are great upgrades. I think, you know, Kukowski can play the middle. Littleton, like Miles said, will run sideline to sideline. Kukowski's more of the thumper that Miles said, but they've upgraded a lot. I mean, and the A is more for, it's as much for last year being bad as it is this year with Littleton and Kukowski. But if there's a grade right now, it doesn't matter which side you're on that spectrum. I think they get an A for now.
And when we look ahead to the draft, Vinny, we've talked about guys like Kenneth Murray being one of the guys that could fall to the Raiders. There's a ton of good linebackers in this draft, but I think maybe somebody that I know you and I talked about when we were at the NFL Combine that may be kind of falling under the radar here is Zach Bond. When you look at the position, you have Isaiah Simmons. He's obviously right in the like top 2-3 picks in this draft. Patrick Queen is up there. Then you have Kenneth Murray, who the Raiders have been very impressed with. Who right now has impressed you in this prospect that the Raiders could look at?
Well, I like the Wisconsin linebacker, Zach Braun. I think he would fit perfectly. I don't know if you necessarily pull the trigger at 19, and if you wait, you're not going to get him because they don't have a second round pick. So I think he's going to be a late first round pick, but he's a guy that can get after the passer. He's that guy that as Ed and Miles were talking about, can be a three down guy where he can cover. He's a former high school quarterback, so he's got athletic ability. and you know, he can stay with tight ends and sometimes even with running backs. So that's the kind of a guy that I would like. I really like what the Raiders did in free agency. And as Ed said, you get an A just because of, you know, you're making an improvement from how bad things were last year, and it was really, really ugly. That's the first thing that struck me, you know, when I really started watching the Raiders, was how bad the linebackers were in coverage. But on top of that, they didn't just bring in names. I mean, Corey Littleton was the best linebacker on the market, and Kukowski was a guy that was emerging. And what I really like about him is the more time he got last year as an injury replacement, the better he got in pass coverage. So he's not a guy that is just going to play the run. I think that he's going to be on the field in passing situation. And you go back a little bit to his history, he was a safety and a wide receiver in high school. So he has pass coverage, you know, in his background. And he started to really come along in that regard last year. So you add two guys that aren't just a little bit better than the guys that they're replacing. They're a lot better than the guys that they're replacing. And if you could double up in the draft by getting, you know, another third starter, whether it's Kenneth Murray, whether it's Patrick Queen, whether it's Zach Bond from Wisconsin, man, all of a sudden your linebackers went from the worst in the NFL to, you know, upper echelon in the NFL. And if you could do that in one offseason, you've really, really made some inroads.
When you look at it, Miles, where are you grading the Raiders right now at this position overall without having drafted anybody?
Well, I would say probably a B plus, and only because I haven't seen what they look like on the field yet. And I think that Corey Littleton should be a massive improvement. I think Kukowski should also be a significant improvement. But I guess until you see them on the field, right, it's almost like you have to grade it separately in your mind, at least for me. I would say probably an A on the offseason moves, and maybe a little bit incomplete because I think that they need to add another linebacker in the draft. But then what they still have overall, because you haven't seen them play on the field in Paul Gunther's scheme, you know, with all the other players around them, it's still kind of a B for me right now. Just, and I guess it's more of an I for incomplete just because you haven't really seen it. But that said, I like what they've done. I think that they have certainly made significant improvements. I think that they still have more to go. I think that if you add a Kenneth Murray, a Patrick Queen to this defense, and you have really three stout linebackers now that you can confidently say, look, these are the three starters that we want. And, you know, you're probably going to be playing two of those guys of the three on most downs, just given the way offenses line up against you. I think that they'll be in much better shape. But I think that they are already in a lot better shape than they were heading into the offseason.
Ed, you know, Vinny and Miles and I have already kind of talked about this, but I wanted to get your take on it. Do you think that there's any chance that the Raiders will take maybe a couple of their picks, package them together, and trade up to get somebody like Isaiah Simmons or Patrick Queen?
Oof, I don't. I mean, obviously, if they could get Simmons, it'd be great. But I tell you what, I think if they're trading up, they could be getting a quarterback. You know, I saw a couple drafts today that had, I don't know why, that they had Jacksonville taking, maybe that was just a smokescreen, taking Herbert. They had Love going before him. I don't think that's going to happen. But no, I'm more and more as the days go by, kind of buying into the concept that he's thinking quarterback. I don't think he should. I suggest he should go wide receiver. But there's so many wide receivers in the draft. And I know those three kind of stand out to everybody. But you can find really good wide receivers. So I'm almost to the side of really believing if he did move up, he would move up for a quarterback and not a defensive player. I just have a feeling more and more people are talking about it. And I think it would be intriguing if he did that, because obviously there'd be a lot of shuffling in that room if he went quarterback.
You know, and
very intriguing.
Real quick, because if you do that, Ed, and you talked about this on yesterday's podcast, you immediately probably turn around and trade, Derek Carr, right? So if you went and traded up, or if you took somebody at 12, you're not going to keep all three of those quarterbacks with Marcus Mariota and Derek Carr and whoever the draft pick is. What do you think you can get for a Derek Carr? From what I understood, there was somewhat of a market for him out there, and we could go right to the Patriots and think, you know, that might be a good fit for him. There's some other teams still that could use him. So if you could get another third round pick or a second round pick for him, all of a sudden you've put yourself in a better position. And as Ed said, this is a deep wide receiver class. to go get the wide receiver, maybe in the second round. So there's a lot of dominoes that could fall under the scenario that Ed just talked about, trading up to get a quarterback or sitting tight at 12 and getting him, and then still being able to use the other resource of Derek Carr as a trade asset to be able to bring back something that's going to be, put you in a good line to come away from this draft with a quality wide receiver.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. Obviously, if they draft a guy in the first round, like we've said, they have to move on from him. I could see anywhere from, let's take Jacksonville at 9, and you think they're going to grab one. Do you include him in the trade? I mean, look, you have no leverage at that point. If they know you're taking a first-round quarterback, there's no leverage left with Carr because you know you're going to move him. I think he's better overall than Nick Foles. I know Nick Foles had the great one, you know, run, but he was, what, a fourth or fifth rounder? So maybe he's in that realm. You have no leverage if you take a quarterback in the first round. And if I'm another team, I'm like, well, I'll give you a fourth or fifth, but I'm not giving you a second because we know you're moving him anyway. Maybe
unless there's a market for him. Unless there's a market for him.
Yeah, and well, and that's what we have to understand. If you believe the side that they've been trying to move him for 2 years, there's not much of a market for him. If you don't believe that side, maybe there is. I mean, you know, do you package him and say go back up Gardner Minshew in Jacksonville? I mean, I don't think they'll really care what he does ultimately if they move him. He's gonna, you know, that's gonna be up to him and what he does with another team. But you know, I don't know. I mean, you know, someone made the point today, and it is true. As much as John Gruden loves quarterbacks, and we know, and he had Brad Johnson, then he went out and beat Gannon in the Super Bowl. He's never really had his pick as a young guy to mold into his likeness and what he wants. He's always kind of had veteran guys. So if he's in love with Love or he's in love with someone else, I'm not going to be surprised if he takes him. There's not a lot of opportunity to do that. And if it, you know, I just believe he's a guy who would love to have his guy. And you could, like I said, you could start Mariota at 7.5 with incentives, and he'd probably be fine. So I'm really interested for the draft. I really want to see what he does. But if he goes quarterback, I guess I'd be less and less surprised as the weeks go on and you'd hear people talking like that.
All right. So overall, when we look at the linebackers again, I think I got grades from everybody, but I mean, what do you think when you just quick takes here, when you look at what they could do next year and the core that could exist here, how much do you think that the Raiders can actually be, like with the help of the defense, become a winning team? Because I think there were some games there that were just a few big runs got let loose, or they just weren't able to stop up a big play, or maybe somebody bit on a play action and you know, sold out on the route before the play unfolded. I mean, just when you look overall at what the Raiders' potential is, how much do you think just this, with the improvements that they've made on linebacker, that this team moves into the realm of becoming a winning one, Miles?
Well, Heidi, I mean, you kind of sound like Jeff Fisher right there, you know, like if, you know, what is it? If, yeah, if
I don't know if that sounds like my grandma, thing.
Listen, my grandfather always says, if you got to start a sentence with if, you know, if doesn't mean anything. Right. But I think, look, at the end of the day, the Raiders are still in a position where, yes, they look like they should be better this year, but I think that they still have a lot of questions to answer on the defensive side of the ball. And I think that despite the fact that they certainly have a lot of talent on the offensive side, they have to put the ball in the box more. That was one of the things that Mike Mayock talked about at the combine, was that, you know, the offensive numbers were really not that bad for the Raiders. But then when you think about the points, they weren't in that top echelon of teams in terms of scoring points. So how do you get the ball into the box? You got to be able to capitalize on your red zone opportunities. Maybe you got to get a couple more takeaways and things like that. Field position matters. John Gruden harped on that a lot of the time. So there are a lot of things that I think the Raiders still have to do in order to really be successful.
Okay, Vinny, what's your hot take or a quick take on the Raiders and the linebacker position, just what the improvements that they've made and how it can help to improve the team in 2020?
I think that they've improved significantly. I'll say that. And you're looking at, if they can improve by 2 wins, now you're really in the playoff hunt. You know, you flip it from 7-9 to 9-7. And I think that there's the capability to do that. It always does amaze me, but not surprises me, that it always goes back to the quarterback, right? Gosh, we can never get through a podcast without falling back on the quarterback and talking about that. And you know, when I say that, it probably is a pretty good sign that they probably don't have their guy yet. I mean, you guys could disagree, agree, I don't know. But whenever you're talking about quarterback, as much as we are, when there's a 6-year starter that's in place, makes you wonder, you know, how comfortable any of us, let alone the Raiders, are with that quarterback moving forward and what his ceiling still is. But as far as the question, I do think that it's there within the reach for them to go get two more wins and make this a 9-17 and really put yourself in the running for the playoffs. I don't know what the answer is on as Miles mentioned, putting the ball in the end zone more. I also think, you know, he mentioned a lot of good things. Penalties also play an issue. You gotta play smart when you're in the red zone and don't keep putting yourself back or negating big plays or significant plays or putting yourself, you know, off schedule. So stay away from the penalties. I know Raider fans are sick of hearing that. It's an ongoing issue year after year after year. They're always committing a lot of penalties, and those are when they really kill you, when you're down in scoring position. So, but I do think when you look at the defense, what they've done, they still have a whole bunch of draft picks remaining to really, you know, make this a much better team. But I do think that they, right now, you can make a case that they could win two more games just with what they have right now.
Okay, and this is just now coming across here on Twitter, so I want to really quickly just get to this because we do need to wrap up things here on the show. But the NFL General Counsel, Jeff Posch, says that the league plans to go forward with its international game series in 2020 if circumstances permit. And of course, that would be games taking place in London, games taking place in Mexico City. I'm reading this off of Albert Breer's Twitter account. So, I mean, just generally, Ed, what are your thoughts on that, given the current climate, everything happening with COVID-19?
Well, it's like Miles said, it's a big if, but I don't know if I'd cancel it now because you don't know when it's going to, you know, you don't know when all these globally, everyone's going to be back to a normal, although I don't think normal is going to happen for a long time. So I wouldn't cancel anything now. I don't think they need to. It's barely April 1st. So, you know, I think, you know, there's no question they have contingency plans in the background for everything. I think that you can say what you want about the league, but they've got attorneys and people behind the scenes who say what if and have contingency plans. But I'm not surprised at all he said that. I mean, why say you're not going to do it now? I mean, it's only April, and if you want to go to back to Tottenham or you want to go back to, you know, Mexico City, those stadiums will likely be ready, given they think you're coming anyway. So whether it happens or not, I don't know, but I certainly wouldn't come out if I'm them right now and say we're canceling it. I assume in their minds they're going to have a full season.
Yeah, I can get with that. That makes a lot of sense. And we'll keep you updated on what we find out here as things go on with everything happening in the NFL world. And you can catch up with all the articles, all the columns on VegasNation.com. That'll do it for us here today. We are presented to you by STN Sports Mobile from Station Casinos. Make sure to download the Vegas Nation app and check out everything that we have on social media at Vegas Nation. And to follow all the guys, you can catch up with them at Ed Graney, at Vinny Bonsignor, Miles A. Simmons, and I'm Heidi Fang. Everybody, thank you so much for listening. We will be back tomorrow with another episode. We're doing this daily leading up to the NFL draft, so check back on VegasNation.com every afternoon for new episodes. Thanks, everybody, for listening.